Blog Talk Radio.
Evening, y'all. Please take a seat on the couch.
Ready to go. Got my suitcase packed. I'm raring to go. I gotta leave this city. Can't take it no more. So much tension in the air. People fighting in the street.
Rip, what, where?
Feel that tension in the air. People fighting in the street.
Rip. What, where?
Big city life sure is killing me. Give me the Delta rhythm. Give me the Delta ride. Take a southbound train. I'm going back to Delta time. Take a southbound train. Take a southbound train. Take a southbound train, I'm going back to Delta time.
If you are not yet a member, you need to go to www.blues.org and become a member today. Your sponsorship dollars help the Blues Foundation support the Heart Fund, which assists blues musicians and their families in financial need. The Sound Healthcare Program, providing medical benefits and insurance programs to professionals in the blues community. The Blues in Schools Program, bringing the blues to schools around the country. And its offshoot, Generation Blues, offering young men and women scholarships to accredited music camps to allow them to learn from some of the best. And the holding of the International Blues Challenge and the Blues Music Awards in Memphis, Tennessee. And now, the building of the Blues Hall of Fame at their headquarters here in Memphis at 421 South Main Street. It's time to help raise the roof. If you love the blues, help support this organization that is keeping the great art form alive. The Blues Foundation at www.blues.org. Let's all help raise the roof.
And I just want to announce that the year-end review shows are going to be preempted this year. There's just not enough time for me to get them together. I lost the weekend. We had a death in the extended family, so I kind of lost this weekend, and it's just not going to happen. I want to do it. If I'm going to do it, I want to do it right. At the top of the show, We heard the song Delta Time, and I had to be careful when I turned my mic on it toward the end of the song because I tend to find myself singing along to it. It's the title track of the new album by Hans Thiessen and my first guest, Mr. Terry Evans. And evening, Terry, and thanks so much for taking time to sit on the couch.
It's my pleasure.
Terry, you have a long career, and many know the basics and whatnot. There's a lot of things that I had, a lot of questions I had when I just looked at your bio, so I'm going to get a chance to have some fun with this one this evening. I know you were born and raised in the Delta of Mississippi, specifically in Vicksburg, and according to your bio, you sang in church as a child, but really not much more. Secular music was forbidden in your home?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when I was coming up, my folks thought the blues was, the devil's music, and so it was forbidden.
Yeah. Now, about what age were you when, you know, you started to, when you first heard it and you realized, hey, there's something else out there besides what I'm singing in church?
Yeah, well, you know, as I went through high school and stuff, I started singing doo-wop with, a few other fellows, quartet style, and at 17, 18 years old or whatever, and then, but actually, I didn't really get started into the music until I moved from Vicksburg, Mississippi, to Los Angeles, California.
Yeah. It talked about you slipping away to listen to the music of Elmore and Little Walter. So it was in high school. I mean, you were older. It wasn't when you were, a young teenager when you finally realized that there was more out there.
No, well, I was sort of like, like you said, in 17, 18 years old when I really was able to go and listen to different genres of music,
Sure.
And so, it was my choice just to not particularly get away from the church music because I still do gospel programs and stuff also. And,
right. Sure.
But then, I ventured off into rock and roll and then the blues and stuff like that. You know, it's all interconnected,
Yeah. So, at some point, did you when you decided to move to L.A. And start to do some singing, and that was your thought when you went out there? I mean, how did your parents react when you told them that you were going out to do this thing?
Well, at that point, they sort of like supported where I was headed because they knew that that's what I was going to do, and so they got behind me. They were supportive of me, but they still wanted me to do gospel music. But
leave the church, but you can do the other.
Yeah. So they got behind me. And they was with me, and that was a good thing.
Yeah. Now, before you got to the West Coast, I mean, like you said, you were doing doo-wop. That was with the Knights.
Was with we traveled all over the state of Mississippi. Doing. We were singing along with a group called the Red Tops. And they were a big band kind of a situation at that time, and so they would invite us to come and sing on some of the programs, and they would back us up,
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very interesting thing. And one of the members of the Red Tops, he acted as manager for us at that time. And so they were always helpful in trying to get us little gigs throughout Mississippi,
Yeah. Now, were these all guys that you knew from high school?
No, the Red Tops were older, much older than we were. They were well into their 30s and 40s,
Right.
And then we were just teenagers coming out of high school and stuff like that. And so they sort of like helped us along, and showed us different different avenues and things, and what that was in support of us, and that helped us along also. And but like I said, you know, I really didn't get involved until I was in, got to California, and you know, I started writing and songs and playing the guitar and stuff like that, and that,
sure.
that's when I really started getting into my own situation, you know.
No, it's interesting because you hear so many stories of the older musicians mentoring young musicians, especially in the blues. And this is just another example of it. And it's just so interesting to me. You don't always see it in a lot of the other genres, but in the blues, it certainly happens. There's always a payback. You know, as people get older, they pay it back to the young, and that kind of keeps moving. I want to play another song from the album. The album is Delta Time. Shelter from the Storm is one of the songs on the album that Hans wrote. Can you talk about recording this one?
Well, it was the recording itself. The whole album was very interesting because you know we had some company. Ry Cooder came in, played with us, and then I had some of the background singers that I've done a lot of work with to come in and do this and do this album with us. So it was very interesting, and but Hunch himself is a very, very interesting artist, and he is a good writer, good slide player, good guitar player, and he has some really great ideas and stuff like that. And you know, and it's always beautiful to work along with this guy because he's a very interesting person.
Yeah.
So it was the whole session itself was really outstanding. Was very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, I was checking out a couple of the clips. There was a couple of promo videos, and it looked like you know you guys were you know enjoying yourselves in the studio. It was a labor of love, if anything else. The album is Delta Time, Hans Thiessink and Terry Evans. And this is Shelter from the Storm.
Give you comfort
when things go wrong. When you say Ted and Tom, you're out there all alone. Let me be your harbor, baby. Give you shelter from the storm.
Delta Time, Hans Thiessink and Terry Evans, and we're here with Terry Evans this evening, showing some love to those on the album. Terry is on vocals, guitar, and does backing vocals, as he did on that song. Hans is on guitar, vocals, mandolin, banjo, harmonica, and foot stomping. Ry Cooter appears on guitar on two tracks, and also supplying the background vocals are Arnold McCullough and the great Willie Green Jr. The album was produced by Terry and Hans and recorded and mixed at Grandma's Warehouse in L.A. by Andrew Bush, and it's on Blue Groove label. Just a fantastic, fantastic album of music. You've mentioned, Terry, you headed out to L.A., and once there you started to learn how to play guitar and also started getting into songwriting. How does someone, you know, in their 20s, you know, all of a sudden, did you take lessons with guitar? Did you?
No. I just picked it up, and you know, just from being around other musicians, learned how to play three or four chords, and then you know, and I started writing songs. Using those three or four chords, you know, I started writing different songs, and so, you know, and then as the years grow, you know, you learn a few more chords, and you extend it a little bit more and a little bit more, and so, you know, and so I've done fairly well. I don't really consider myself a guitar player, but I play well enough to support the songs and things that I'm writing, you know.
The songs you're writing are, you know, recorded by people like Pop Staples and Louis Jordan. How did you know your music get to them so that they were able to record it?
Well, with the late great Louis Jordan, years ago I was associated with a gentleman called Maxwell Davis, who was the arranger for B.B. King, and he had produced the last CD for Louis Jordan called Hallelujah, Louis Is Back. That was the last CD that he recorded, and so Maxwell asked me if I had any kind of material that Louis would be interested in. So I sent him some songs, and he picked one. You know, Hop, Skip, and Jump was the name of the song, and he recorded it on his last album, Hallelujah, Louis Is Back. And that's how I got I was able to get a song to Louis Jordan.
Yeah.
Was working through Maxwell Davis.
Ah, okay. Okay, great. During the 60s and 70s, most of the 60s and into the 70s, you worked as a session man, recording many artists, and around that time you met Ry Cooder. Talk about what Terry Evans learned doing all those sessions that made you where you are, that put you where you are today.
Yeah, and I have to admit that Ry Cooder was very instrumental in where I am today. I mean, and as a result of working with him, I got offers to work with a lot of other different people. And then he was also a producer of other people that he used my talent on as background singer on different projects and things that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big projects that he had was doing the soundtrack for the movie Crossroads, which was the story of Robert Johnson.
Ralph Macchio,
the Karate Kid.
Yep.
And I was able to work on that soundtrack, and it did very well. And I think the movie was a little early at that time. Blues was not prevalent in the market today as it is now. But I was fortunate to be associated with Ry, because a lot of things happened as a result of my association with him.
Yeah,
and I got a chance to work with a lot of different people.
I've had a guest on this show, Johnny Childs, a guitar player out of New York City. He's actually president of the New York Blues Society. He called that movie one of the most influential things in his life to make him want to learn about the blues.
Yeah.
He was, you know, a young kid, and he saw the movie. Now, Ry sang the title track on the album, but you sang it in the movie, correct?
Yeah.
You know, was that just going into the studio and going into a recording studio? Did you, you know, had you seen any of the dailies or any of the film prior to you recording for that?
Well, no. Actually, what we tried to do was I tried to get as near the sound of Robert Johnson as I possibly could. And we used some of the old recordings that Robert had done, and so this. But I had not seen the, you know, any footage on the movie or anything. So I just tried to duplicate what Robert had done himself, you know. And,
sure.
And Ryan myself was, you know, working together there, trying to come up with the Robert Johnson sound there. So. That we did it as best we could, you know, at that time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I certainly remember the movie, and I certainly, you know, remember enjoying it. I know that a lot of critics might have panned it, but maybe again, as you said, maybe it was before its time, and it didn't have as much meaning as maybe it would have today. So now you go into the early 70s, and that's when you met Bobby King.
Bobby King, yeah.
Yeah, and you guys started touring together at clubs and festivals around the world. You guys spent quite a long time together. Talk about that relationship.
Well, yeah, I met Bobby here in Los Angeles. He was working around in little clubs, and I was working around in little clubs, and so we just sort of like formulated a duet kind of a thing, and you know, we did songs by Sam and Dave, you know, cover songs by them, and artists like that, Wilson Pickett and stuff like that. And so we started working around, and it kind of got good to us, you know, got a little popular, and so we started touring, you know, around doing military installations, army bases around in California, and then we would extend ourselves, go out on tour up into Virginia and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're mostly working military bases, army bases, Air Force bases, and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
So then we were associated with Rykooda, both of us, Bobby King and myself, and we were fortunate enough to get a contract. We recorded two CDs together, and Ry produced the first one for us, and then this was on Rounder Records.
Mm-hmm.
And the first album was called Live and Let Live, and Ry was the producer of that, and did pretty good, and you know, it got us going around a little bit, and then the company gave us enough money to do a second CD. So Bobby and I did two CDs, and but we had, you know, we had a long time relationship though.
Yeah, and you, I mean, the two of you worked together on albums with Bob Dylan and John Fogerty and Boss Skeggs. Plus, as you said, all of those Rykooda albums that you both worked on over the years. It was a nice partnership that you both had, and your voices are just perfect together. So I'm sure that's why you got so much of that work. Now, at what point did you and Hans hook up?
Bobby King and I were working in Winnipeg, Canada, and must have been 20 years ago, 15, 17, 18 years ago, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we were working in, and Hans had a spot in this festival also. So he had always read about us and stuff like that, and so we got a chance to meet him in Winnipeg, Canada.
Oh.
And he invited us to do some background work on his Call Me CD. So he came to L.A. and he hired us to come in and do some background work with us. That's how I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, but to actually start working with him, he invited me to do some other work on some of his tours and stuff like that. And so, you know, we've sort of like had a 20-year association, you know.
Sure, and this is just the second album that you've done together. You seem to do most of your shows together over in Europe. Does he not come to the United States or to North America often enough for you guys to do a nice-sized tour here, or is it just that the popularity is bigger in Europe?
I think the popularity is bigger in Europe, and also it was more economically advantageous to us because his wife was his booking agent,
uh-huh.
And it was easier for us to connect for the European jobs than it was having him come to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not as popular in the U.S. as I was in Europe.
Yeah.
So it was like I said, it was more feasible for us to tour Europe together because he had a well known name and I had a well known name in Europe, and so. That's why we did most of the work there. So, but
sure.
we're trying to filter into the States now with this Delta Time CD. The first CD we did, Visions, we didn't have distribution here in the States.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We only had it in Western Europe, and this is why we did most of the touring over there in Europe because of the CD we had. Saturation over in Europe.
Sure.
But now With the second CD, we're getting a little bit more saturation here in the States, and so we're looking forward to doing some gigs here in the States as soon as we possibly can. You know.
Oh, great! That's great news. Why do you think you're more popular in Europe than the United States, Terry?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for it, really.
Is it the acceptance? Is it the music is accepted more, do you think, over there? I mean, so many of my guests have talked about the reception they get over in Europe, and they don't always feel that the reception for the blues and R&B is, well, maybe not R&B, but more the blues is, you know, here. I mean, I know, you know, I live right outside of Memphis, and I know a lot of the Memphis musicians have to go other places to be able to get really good gigs. It's almost seems like you're never popular at home, but you're always popular in the next town over. Or the next country over, you know.
I've had greater success in Europe than I've had here, but to actually put my finger on why, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just go with the flow, man, you know.
Sure, and, absolutely.
And but I think that I can't very well say that the music is more appreciated in Europe than here. I think it's appreciated the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that here at home there is so much. But in other countries, you know, they don't have so very much. I mean, you know, when an artist come to town, that's a big thing over in, you know, the different countries. You know, here in the States, we have a variety of all kinds of things, man. You know, we have so many, you know, so many musicians, so many festivals and so many different things. I mean, people they can see these things at any time, you know.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Whereas
mm-hmm.
in Europe, you know, an artist go to Europe, it's a big thing, you know. But the music, I think people love the music the same way.
Yeah.
It's just that they have more. They're able to see and hear more music here in the States than they are in Europe.
That's a great point. It's a great point. I saw a video interview that you and Hans did after a festival up in Canada, and it seemed like at one point you guys were talking about the way the blues are today and some of the blues are being today, and it appeared to me from the interview that maybe you're not real happy with some of the direction the blues is going. Did I misinterpret that?
No, actually, I'm very pleased with where where the blues is today, and I'm happy that people are beginning to pay more attention to it in this day and time than yesterday, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with where it's at. Now, I know it's been here forever and it's going to be here. A lot of people say we have to do this to keep the blues alive. Hey, man, the blues is going to be alive.
Yeah.
We will accept this support in supporting it, but it's going to stay alive. You know.
Yeah, it feels the umbrella has gotten larger to include more. You know, there's now that Hillgrass Bluebilly. You know, it's a little bit harder edge blues that some of the bands are out there playing. And I know that there's, you know, some people who embrace it because it's taking some of it's almost hip hop and blues have sort of formed a bond. I know here in Memphis, Bobby Rush did a concert recently, and Yo Gotti, the rapper, was on the same bill with him, and they kind of, you know, even did something on stage together. So it's and it kind of in some ways makes sense because they're both more spoken word music than music. You know, there's more of a story to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then the ingredients of all of it is sort of intertwined. I mean, the blues is has influenced different genres of music, you know.
Sure.
But
yeah.
but you can hear the influences of the blues and pretty much all the music that you hear now.
Yeah.
And all the rhythms that the hip hoppers are doing, it's blues orientated, man. The foundation is the blues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So so it's you know, I can understand how Bobby Rush how they, you know, could intertwine the music there,
mm-hmm.
the hip hop and what he's doing. I mean, because it's the ingredients is really the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I hope that I'm explaining it to where everybody can understand.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Terry, what's next for you? I mean, you just had this incredible career, you know, that's still going on. What's next on your, you know, to-do list? That's something that you really want to do going forward?
Well, I don't have anything special that I would want to do. I'm just grateful that God has allowed me to be, to do the music and to keep me physically and mentally sound enough to go out and enjoy what I have the passion for, and
yeah.
you know. But I don't have anything special that I would like to do. I mean, you know, I'm writing new songs for a new album and stuff like that. But that's, you know, that's pretty basic, and I'm okay with where I am musically. And like you said, you know, I'm not a super guy, but I'm okay. I'm happy
mm-hmm.
that I'm able to go and do and perform for the people and enjoy myself.
That's wonderful. All things Terry Evans can be found at www.terryevansmusic.com. It's TerryEvans. music.com. And to learn more about Hans Thiessink, you can check out www.thiessink.com. It's TheeSink. We're going to play one more song off of the album, Delta Time. Most times I want to spend a lot of time talking with my guests, and I pick short songs. But I'm going to take a little time away from my next guest because I want to play Down in Mississippi, because I just think that this is it's a song that I think comes from the heart, and I believe I also saw something where you talked about how special this song is to you.
Yeah.
Thiessink. Thiessink. I'm sorry. I keep saying Thiessink. It's Thiessink, correct?
Thiessink.
Thiessink. Okay. Okay. Frank's in the chat room, and he's trying to correct me by spelling it Thiessink. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Talk about Down in Mississippi.
Well, down, you know, it's sort of an experience that I've had growing up down in Mississippi. So, you know, I'm just expressing some of my realistic experiences, that's all.
Okay. Terry, I hope, you know, when you and Hans come out on the road that you get down near Memphis. I'd love to come out and see you guys perform. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us tonight. You know, as we talked about before we came on the air, Terry just got back from doing 30-some-odd dates in the last month over in Europe and just got back a couple of days ago. So we were able to fit him in on the back end of his long tour. And I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season and a wonderful new year. And when that new album is out, I hope you bring it to us and let us, you know, come back on the air. All of my guests are invited to bring anything, you know, special back. As a matter of fact, I've got the Bush League on later. They're bringing their album that drops later on this week. So when the new album is done, I'd love you to come back and bring it to us.
Certainly, and I appreciate all the support.
Okay, from Delta Time by Hans Thiessink and Terry Evans. This is Down in Mississippi.
Have you ever been down to Mississippi? Somebody tell me. Oh, tell me. I want to tell you a little story about my own self, my experience growing up in Mississippi. Listen. As far back as I can remember, I either had to plow or hoe, carry one of those long cotton sacks, y'all, standing at the old turn road down in Mississippi. Down in Mississippi. Down in Mississippi, where I was born. Down in Mississippi, where I came from. Way down, Lord, Lord, way down. Now you see, they had a hunting season on a rabbit. If you shoot him, boy, you're gonna go to jail. But the season was always open on me. Nobody needed no bail. Down in Mississippi. Down in Mississippi. Down in Mississippi, where I was born. Down in Mississippi, where I came from. Way down. Way down. Lord have mercy. Now you see, I ain't got nothing against Mississippi, cause that old place was the home of my life. But I feel just like a lucky man sometimes to get away with my life down in Mississippi. Down in Mississippi. Down in Mississippi, where I was born. Down in Mississippi, where I came from. Way down. Way down. Lord, I used to have to work so hard every day, the sweat would roll off my backyard in Mississippi. But that's all right, you see, I had a good family, yeah. My dear old mother, and my father, my sister and my brother. It's all right, y'all. We made it through. And by the grace of God, everything worked out all right. So I want to take this time to thank my God, yeah. Thank the Master. Talking about my God, heaven above. Talking about my Father, heaven above. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. Yeah, yeah. It was a hard time, but that's all right. Cause we had Jesus in our corner. We had the Lord on our side. Talking about my God sent from heaven. Talking about my God above us all. Wow. Lord, have mercy, yeah.
Song Down in Mississippi from Delta Time, but from Hans Tasink and Terry Evans. This segment of Music on the Couch is sponsored by Taz Crew. It's been said that Taz is the master of the triple entendre with the soul of a poet, and on his latest album, Tired of Bluesmen Crying, Taz proves that he is one of the most unique of bluesmen plying his trade today. Check out all things Taz Crew and buy this album and all his others at www.TazCrew.com. That's www.TASCRU.com. And now I am thrilled to welcome in to the couch Mr. John Lee Hooker Jr. Evening, John Lee, and thanks for joining me this evening.
How are you, Vinny? And thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. You were born in Detroit, Michigan, and obviously to the great John Lee Hooker and your mom. And at what age did the guitar come into your hands? Because it almost seems like you were born with one in your hands.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you that when I did pick it up, I didn't go very far with it. So I am not the expert that my dad was, but he showed me a lot of on the job skills and on the job training, and I am blessed and thankful with what I already have. I'm not going to use the word unfortunate that I didn't become an expert guitar player like he was, but I will say that I am who I am, and this is what I got.
Absolutely. You still have the skills. I mean, you performed for the public for the first time at 8 years old on the radio in Detroit. Do you remember that day and how you felt walking into the studio?
I certainly do. I can visualize it right now. We were walking up the stairs. It seemed like the stairwell was really, really hollow. So we walked up the stairs together, and we met Jumpin' Joe Howard, WJBK, I believe it was. And, of course, my dad said, who is the little guy? And my dad said, this is John Jr., and introduced us. And to make a long story short, can he sing? Yeah, he can sing a little bit. He's trying. You want to sing on the radio? I didn't go down there to sing. I just was with my dad. We were road dogs.
Right.
And the occasion came, the opportunity came up, and there I was singing one of his songs through the microphone. I had to sit on his lap, and because, of course, I was too short, and there I was. Mm-hmm.
That's funny. Let's check out the tune. The new album is called All Hooked Up. You wrote the lyrics for all the songs. Talk about Listen to the Music, which you co-wrote with Larry Batiste.
Well, what a wonderful piece of work. Pulling from Larry's New Orleans background and pulling from what I have in me, the Motown. We just put our heads together, and what a great piece of music. The lyrics, we both collaborated with. As a matter of fact, Larry provided the music, the beat, the tempos, and the melody and whatnot. And he said, here you go, John. So I took it and worked with it and worked with it and worked with it, and that's how it came out. What a collaboration.
Yeah,
wonderful piece of work. And it's recognized. Had one guy, we just flew in from Alaska, and when that song was performed, a guy walked past while the music was going. He showed his ID. And after the music was over, I looked at it and it said he was from Louisiana. So it's recognized as the Bayou Beat. And that's what people need to do, is listen to the music, because music has stories in it. Music has warnings in it. Music tells you how to be happy. Music tells you how to just relax. Music tells you that it's going to be all right. And I believe with all my heart that God is in music. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. The album is All Hooked Up, John Lee Hooker Jr., and Listen to the Music. Jr. from All Hooked Up. John Lee, ton of talent in your family. Your brother Robert is an accomplished keyboard organ player. He also worked with your dad for a while. Your sister is it Zakiya?
Yeah, Zakiya. Uh-huh.
Zakiya, okay. I kept saying Zakiya, and I said, no, I bet you it's Zakiya, but okay. Zakiya, she's a singer and has several CDs out, and you even have a cousin, Archie, who's a singer. So there's a lot of good genes in the family there.
Yes, sir. But before I go to elaborate on that, I just wanted to mention the background singing that you hear on that Listen to the Music.
Yep.
Is none other than the producer Larry Batiste. What a marvelous and talented producer this guy was. Provided the chorus for that song, and great song. Good introduction to the show, Benny. Yes, one of my cousins, but Archie is in France. He moved to France, and he's over there performing. My sister, Zakiya, she goes abroad probably 2 to 3 times every year. And, of course, she has a side job. She's a supervisor at a courthouse.
Okay.
And, and my brother, God bless him, he's passed on, Robert, who had performed with my dad. As a matter of fact, I believe he also performed on the I'll Never Get Out of These Blues Alive with my dad and Van Morrison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the time you were a teenager, you were on the road with your dad. Was that just during school breaks and summers?
Yes, of course, during school breaks at 17 years old. At 17 years old, that was my debut, as a matter of fact, on stage. And, of course, I was afraid because there was a lot of people out there. I mean, you know, give me 20 people and I'll, you know, do the splits. But
right.
A lot of people out there, and that was my chance to show what I can do and show what I couldn't do. And it was exactly the latter, what I couldn't do. That was my first mistake on the stage. And it's a process. You don't get on the stage like Michael Jackson did. And when he was a kid, he hit it. But there was a process in the making behind the curtains as well. And after that, of course, 18, 19, 20, and all up in there, I went on the road with him and learned the trick of the trade.
Yeah, and you were 18, you went and you did Live at Soledad Prison. What was it like when you found out you were going to be going into Soledad to do a performance?
Well, it was really, really, my goodness. I mean, every time that comes up, it's kind of emotional, and at the same time, I can look back and be thankful and look at where I am now and be so very, very grateful.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the story behind that or whatever, but I went into that prison with my dad. Of course, it was a full house, standing room only.
Right.
And it was infamous because that's where Sirhan was, and that's where the Black Panther Party, one of the Soledad brothers, George Jackson,
mm-hmm.
Angela Davis, there's a lot of history that was there.
Yeah.
And I went in, of course, and it was really unusual, but it was a bunch of guys with smiling faces and just so happy to see us and to see his kid. They knew of him, but to see his kid was kind of like a very, very, very. It made them very, very happy to see someone trying to carry on, do what they're following their father's footsteps, but. The sad part about it, what happened after that was like 2 or 3 years later, First it was my gig, and then the venue that was my gig became my residence because addicted to drugs and drug-related crime sent me right back there. Well, of course, the guard that was standing there in front of the stage guarding us, making sure that we were all right, turned around to 3 or 4 years later become my supervisor on a landscape crew. And matter of fact, he brought it. He says, "I know who you are," and showed me a picture that the photographer took of me on stage. And as a matter of fact, he gave it to me when I was released from prison. Oh. And I have that I have that photo of Ernie the guard sitting and standing in front of the stage, guarding us, and me on stage performing.
That's incredible.
So, and then, you know, of course, just like I was well received during when I was a free guy coming in there to perform, I was well received as well because people understand, you know, drugs and alcohol is like a common cold. Everybody, not everybody, but somebody going to get it, especially if they go out in the cold with nothing on. So.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that I'm here today, clean and sober for many, 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 many years. And
yeah, it's. I mean, you know, you lost all of those creative years during the '80s and the '90s as you battled the addictions and your demons. It was your dad passed away in 2001, and
right.
After that, I guess it was your internal clock went off, and your family and friends gathered around, and your internal strength, and you developed that you developed allowed you to crawl out from under the weight of your problems.
Well, my dad, I give all the credit to God, but my dad and my family, I had a loving family, and I still do. But you know, his wish was before he left this earth. Not that he thought he was in imminent danger of leaving pretty soon, but we all got to go one day. He just said, "Before I go, man, I sure want to sin." And it happened before he left. When I got out of prison in 1997, his prayer came true. So,
yeah, sure did. Yeah. And you got back into music 2004. You released Blues with a Vengeance, which I've seen you've called your celebratory redemption.
Yes, sir.
The album, obviously other people felt the same way because you earned a Grammy nomination in the traditional blues album category. You got a nomination for the W.C. Handys, which is now called the Blues Music Awards.
Oh, I won that. I won
you
it.
Won that, yes, yes. You got the nomination and won Best New Artist Debut. The California Music Awards named Blues with a Vengeance 2004's Outstanding Blues Album of the Year, and the Bay Area Blues Society presented you with the 2004 Comeback Artist of the Year Award. you certainly have found your redemption, but have you ever thought about it, John Lee, if the album hadn't been received, what would have happened after that?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. When Blues with a Vengeance was recorded, you know, Grammy nominations let known the Grammy itself was not even in my mentality. I didn't even. That's not where I was. Where I was doing what I love to do, carrying on. And at the same time carrying on my dad's legacy. This is something I like to do. It's just like me going to play baseball. I would never think that anybody would come along and say, some talent scout come along and say, "I'm taking you to the big leagues." No, I'm doing what I love to do. And that just so happened to happen. I don't go into the studio to, you know what I mean, let's get ready. But now that stuff has happened, of course, it's just formality, it's just standard. But no, I would have made the next album and the next album, and that's what I did. I made a couple of more albums, and then here comes another Grammy nomination. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not expecting these things to happen.
But
I got a phone call about by a crying colleague, so emotional, I thought something was happening. And he said, congratulations, congratulations for what? You've been nominated for a Grammy. You know, I mean, you know, you got the Michael Jacksons, and you got the Princes, and you got the B.B. Kings, and you got the, we had the Etta James, we had the, all of these giants, you know, and that's who I went up against. I was up against B.B., I was up against big names.
Yeah.
And they won, but people told me, hey, nobody, people go through a lifetime and don't get nominated, and look who you were with. So the next time it was with B.B. King. And, of course, B.B. King won. But what an honor to be up there with the giants. You know, a little bitty guy like me just got out of prison. Ex-drug addict, you know. Yeah, this was great. Walking the red carpet, I walked that San Quentin prison yard and Soledad prison yard, and I'm like, walking the red carpet, I'm like, thank you, God.
Yeah.
So I felt I won. I still feel I won. But no, nothing would have happened if nothing like that happened. I don't expect these things. I just go in and I do the best that I can do, and I be the best that I can be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you walk in that red carpet, those bright lights in your eyes are flashes and not the spotlights from the guard towers. It's a whole different
thing. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Let's do another tune from the album All Hooked Up. Let Me Be. Your bandmates all get credit on this, along with your lyrics. Tell us about the song Let Me Be.
Well, I carry around a little bitty tape recorder, and when I get an idea, I'll hum it. So I put that little tune, that little melody in there, and I start putting some lyrics with it. I took it to a little old bitty rehearsal studio in Oakland, California, and put it to the mic. I gave the bass man his bass line, and I said, here it is. And that's what you're about to play right now. And that's Frank Tebow in the background. We put some effects on his voice, and that's how that song came to be born.
John Lee Hooker Jr. from All Hooked Up, Let Me Be.
I don't like to go to juke joints, 'cause all they do is shoot and fight. They go around everybody's table, they try to take somebody else's wife. That's why I stay to myself, and don't be bothered with nobody else. I just stay to myself. Or when you see me walking down the street, certain people to my party, 'cause they always like to scream and shout. When you tell them to leave your house, they get mad and want to curse you out. That's why I stay to myself. I don't be bothered with nobody else. I just stay in my house. So if you see,
what'd you say, Mom?
say I'm too old for my wife, and she's too young for me. They need to mind their own damn business, 'cause we're as happy as we can be. That's why we stay to ourselves. We don't be bothered with nobody else. You see, we're loners. Oh, when you see me coming down the street, let me be, or just leave me alone. You see, when I was a little boy, they used to tease me about the clothes I wore. So-called friends, even the people next door. Oh, but today, 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 I got a peace of mind. Stay to myself, and I'm doing just fine. I don't allow nobody in my circle. They talk behind my back. And if I don't watch what I'm doing, they might just attack. I don't allow nobody to get in my business. Spread it all over town. Tell everybody around. So when you see me coming down the street, ow, let me be.
John Lee Hooker Jr. from All Hooked Up, Let Me Be, and showing love to those on the album. On drums, Michael Rogers. On bass, Frank Thibodeau and Jeff Chambers. On guitars are Alvin Johnson, John Garcia, Lucky Peterson, Jeff Lee Horan, Wilton Robb. On keys are Will Rock Griggin, John Burr, James Gig Anderson. On harmonica, Dave Barrett. On sax, Doug Rowan, Phil Lorenz, Tony Bolivar, Eddie Minfield. On trombones, Rick Mighty Bone Feliciano. On trumpet, Tom Paul, Louis Fassman, and Dave Hardiman. Larry Batiste did the horn arrangements. John Lee Hooker Jr. is executive producer. It was recorded and mixed and mastered by James Gardner at Pajama Recording Studios in Oakland. Definitely something you should definitely check out. Cold as Ice came out 2 years after Blues with a Vengeance, and you really began to make the transformation of your music, taking blues to a different level and incorporating a lot of different sounds to it. Was it your intent to take your dad's blues and bring it into the new century?
Well, it's just no, that wasn't. I didn't go into a lab workshop or a laboratory and try to, you know, strategize that move. No, that's just who I am, Vinny. I'm a modern type of cat, you know.
Yep.
And when you give me something, that's how it's going to come out. It might you might have it one way that you give it to me, but I'm going to keep it in the same form, but it's coming out different. And my dad has always told me, "Yep, John Jr., you're a modern type of guy, contemporary." And but I can shift gears as well. But no, I never worked a thought on trying to deliver it that way. Mm-hmm.
Now we've just had I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of guests come on recently who are, you know, stretching the boundaries of the blues a little bit, because it's just it feels necessary. And I was actually just speaking to Terry about this, you know, and the joining of blues and hip hop is even becoming more prevalent here in Memphis. Recently, this past summer, Bobby Rush and Yo Gotti shared a stage at the Levitt Show. And you know, at first when I thought about it, I went, wait, does that make sense? And then when I thought about it a little bit more, I said, yeah, I guess it kind of does. There's so much of the blues in hip hop, the storytelling.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. The next year you released All Odds Against Me. It was your first album where you did not cover any of your dad's music, correct?
Right.
Yeah. And it brought you the second Grammy nomination, as you mentioned, and it brought to the world Bluesman, the animated blues superhero who was created
right.
by Laurent Mercier. His
that
dad, I guess, was a musician also over in France and a big fan of your dad's. And you two put this together with both of your dads sort of, you know, to sort of honor them and to give you another outlet. And Bluesman is a cool little character. You have fun with him?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, the All Hooked Up CD has a bonus DVD
right.
as well. The best one yet to me. And it's
John.
Called Dear John.
Yeah.
So Bluesman is showing, you know, that particular DVD is autobiographical. And he's just a little bit more modern. And Calicore Productions has done some great work. And if you see, and I'm sure you have you seen it?
I've watched it a couple of times already. I enjoy it so much. It's the animation to it is great, and the song is it's a wonderful song. It's a, you know, it's like having a secret bonus song on the album.
It's a true story. The name of that hotel, I say inside of the story that I'll keep the name anonymous for fear of judicial repercussions, but the name of that hotel was called the Henry Hotel on 6th Street, and the rest is here. It is just a great piece of work, and that's one of my logos, taking the blues to another level. This is the first ever blues animated graphic cartoon ever to be made, and I'm often wishing that my dad would have been here to see this here. See, he would have been bragging, but that's my boy.
Yeah, I have a feeling he would have gotten a real kick out. He would have made you put his character in there with you, I'm sure.
Oh man, you know it. See there, you know that would have happened.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
that's what would have happened. And my dad was a competitor, and that's the competitor in me. We, you know, in a loving way, always tried to do each other. One time I bought a diamond ring, and it had just one stone in it, and I would walk through, and I would hold my hand up and show him that. I said, put your sunglasses on, back on, Dad. I know you ain't on stage, but put your sunglasses on. And he saw my diamond ring, and I think it was 2 days later, he drove all the way down from Redwood City to Oakland. And got out of the limousine or whatever he was in, and they walked him upstairs to my apartment. He said, I know the sun is shining, but I'm going to make the sun shine inside your little apartment. And he pulled out that 20 diamond ring. So I know he would have won. If he'd have saw that cartoon, he would, you can't outdo me. I'm your daddy.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, absolutely. 2010, you released Live in Istanbul. It just had Mitch Woods on, and he released an album recently that he recorded over in Istanbul. The audience seems to be incredibly receptive to American blues and jazz over there. Was it a fun time?
My goodness, 23 days, 23 shows in Turkey.
Were you on that blues festival, that the movie, Rogan Blues Festival?
Epson Blues Festival,
it's like a
Budweiser beer.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's just a big chain, just like Budweiser is a big chain.
Mm-hmm.
And we traveled all over Turkey, and I'm telling you, they had to have guards to hold them screaming fans back. We thought we were the Beatles and Michael Jackson and all in one. It was great. They just loved the music. And so it was decided by me really quick, we are going to capture this on wax. And I brought the hard drive back. I had the promoter. I said, send me somebody that can record this. And at the same time, we did a DVD. They filmed it at, you know, had cameras all in the sky and, you know, following the crowd and the excitement of the crowd. And so that's what we did. We captured that and brought it back to America, and that's what you had live in Istanbul, Turkey.
Yeah, it's the same festival that Mitch and his band, the 88s, the Rocket 88s, were on. It sounds
right.
Like an incredible. He talked about how well they were treated. I mean, like he said,
yeah.
We stayed at top notch hotels everywhere we went, and
everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. You've been really. I mean, there's a lot of artists who have gone through, you know, the troubles that you went through, but you've been very open about them, and you've gone on a number of TV shows and the like to discuss them. If you can find yourself, I guess. Well, let me say it. Yeah. Okay. If you can find yourself, the past is the past. But that's no reason to forget the past, because you can learn from it. And you've done a great job of, you know, preaching that since you've come back to us. How important is it to continue to try to teach the younger people?
It's very important. We all don't make it out of this alive. My dad wrote a song saying, "I'll never get out of these blues alive." He was serious. He was serious. Because he knew where his end would be. With drugs and alcohol, you know, we don't know if we're going to get out of it. I, by the grace of God, got out of it. I recovered. I'm still recovering. Some people don't make it. I got a song about some of my friends didn't make it out. There's a lot of people that are going on. There are a lot of people that are going to die as we speak because of drugs, because of the destruction. And I was shot. I think I've been shot twice. One, two. Yeah. I'm just trying to see where the wounds are. I'm sorry. So, because I have I was stabbed in my back as well. So I got one, two, three. Yeah, I got two bullet wounds and then a stab wound to the back. I could have died. That man pulled that trigger back and said, "Give me the money," and I swear to God, I don't have it. With tears rolling down my eyes, he cocked the trigger back and ran out the room. And I jumped up and hopped out of there with the money in my back pocket all the time. That's how dumb and stupid and ignorant and demonic it is. So everybody don't make it. And so my job is to tell these kids and these grown-ups and those older than I am, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's you say you're going to do it different. I'll do mine different than John or somebody else did that. But that's a lie from the pits of hell, because the results are going to be the same. Death, destruction, disrespect, status of a low-down loser bum, and nobody trusts you. Nobody. They used to take their purses to the bathroom when I used to walk around in their house coats.
Yeah.
So nobody trusts you.
Yeah.
Nobody. And it's a pitiful way to be. And my job while I'm here on this earth is to tell young people, old people, whatever you want to call them, people in general, it's not the way you want to live. God created us to be healthy, living human beings, and here we go. We want to put something to make us drunk, change our mind, and change our mood, alter everything that's decent to make it turn into a. Remember that movie called The Walking Dead? That's
yes,
what
sir.
A drug addict is. We're walking dead people. We're zombies. Because all we want to do is get a thrill. And the thrill, don't let, B.B. wrote a song, said the thrill is gone. Trust me, after you take that first hit or shoot that dope, the thrill is gone, and here you are with your, excuse my language, with your dumb ass going to look for it again. It's never ending. And some go to the grave trying to find the next hit. I'm one hit away from death. If I hit or shoot, I'm one hit or one shot or one drink away from death. And that's ever present before me. Ever present before. I never want to forget, glory. Mm-hmm. Never want to forget where I came from. I don't romanticize what I did. I say it as a constant reminder, and I echo that to all those who hear me. You don't want to go down. It feels good now, probably, when you're a youngster. Boy, but sit up in one of them. Prison has gotten so, it was a death trap when I was there. Yeah, they kill you about you looking the wrong way. They thought it was you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just not a good place to be. So that's why I echo it. Don't mess with it. Cigarettes, I don't do nothing of any. Thanks
okay.
be to God. Mm-hmm.
That's well, you know, I mean, personally, I'm, you know, thrilled that you found your way back, because you know, there's a message to be heard. And,
that's right.
And your music is meant to be heard. You know, Zach Harmon was on recently, and we talked about his latest album, which is entitled "Music Is Medicine," and I think it's so very true to so many people. And I think that the music has helped, has been medicine to you also, to keep you where you are today, to bring you back to us.
Listen to the music.
Yeah, listen to the music. On the 29th, John Lee Hooker Jr. is in Oakland at the Torch Club, and New Year's
Sacramento.
Eve is at Sacramento at the Torch Club. Oh, okay. And New Year's Eve is at Biscuit and Blues in San Francisco?
San Francisco, correct.
Okay. And then the New Year, are you off to Poland then?
Off to, I think we're going, no, before Poland, we go to Algiers, Africa for 7 days, then come back and go to Warsaw and Zapakany, Poland. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. The things are just really going great. All things John Lee Hooker Jr. can be found at www.johnleehookerjr.com. You can check him out on Facebook, and his Twitter handle is @HookerJr.
And you can get that on iTunes and Amazon as well.
And you can get the album on iTunes and Amazon.
All online distributors all over the world. Mm-hmm.
I really, we're going to have one last song from All Hooked Up. Tell us the tale behind Tears in My Eyes. This is a song, this is a song that, you know, could have been written 60 years ago, 70 years ago. I mean, it's just so classic, so timeless.
Thank you.
Tell us about it. Tell
Tears in My Eyes. You talked about redemption a while back. Well, this is a sort of a recovery song, and that's one of my affirmations today. Is I don't care how hard it gets, Vinny. You that's listening, I will never, ever take another drink. I will never take another hit. I will never stick myself with a needle ever again. I don't care how. I will not let these tears in my eye. I won't, you know, I won't cry to the point. Nothing wrong with crying. But as an addict, when I hurt, I went to look for something to soothe my pain, which was nothing that the doctor ordered. So Tears in My Eyes is one of my favorites. So when you said Tears in My Eyes, I laughed.
That's good. Well, I'm glad I picked it. John Lee, I really appreciate you taking time to come on. I hope you guys get close to Memphis. I'd love to meet you in person and come out and see you play live.
Certainly. I'm sure that we'll be back at Memphis in May pretty soon. It's been a while since we've been there, and we got some good friends down there. And I just thank you for inviting me to sit on the couch and kick it with you, brother.
I appreciate you, brother, and have a wonderful, healthy Christmas and New Year's to you and your family.
You do the same, and we shall meet.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Vinny.
Thank
bye-bye.
You, John. Bye-bye. John Lee Hooker Jr. from All Hooked Up. This is Tears in My Eyes. Thank you.
keeps passing me by. I just need to hold on, not let these tears in my eyes. No email, I don't even get no text, not even a message on my wall. Above all things, I can't get weak and take another drink. I must endure through it all. I wrote up a 10-page letter, and it came right back to my home. Then return the sender, your girl is gone. I even know the sounds of the mail truck that keeps on passing me by. But I must be patient and not let these tears in my eyes. Toss and turn all night long. Listen to the crickets in the night. Probably turn my TV on.
I gotta tell ya.
Now I'm gonna go. Woo! And it's so long, Johnny. Bye bye.
Let's declare an International Blues Music Day. Hi, my name is Johnny Childs, blues musician and president of the New York City Blues Society. To support this great cause, please join our Facebook group called Petition to Declare an International Blues Music Day. Join the discussion and let's create a formal day to celebrate blues music. From its legends and pioneers in the U.S., to the continually evolving pool of modern-day blues artists around the world. Let's celebrate our love for this great American art form and bring more recognition and support to blues music for many generations to come. Find our Facebook group called Petition to Declare an International Blues Music Day. This is Johnny Child saying thank you for supporting the blues.
And I'm sorry, I'm just still getting over that interview with John Lee. He's just so open and honest and really is a special, special man and an incredible singer. Back early February this year, at the IBCs, I met a group of guys and a gal. And we actually were staying in the same hotel, and I got to see a little bit of one of their sets. I really enjoyed the music, and they've been on before. The name of the band is The Bush League, and it's Debbie Flood on drums, Royce Folk on acoustic bass, Shane Parch on guitars, and the big man, John Jason Cecil, up front. As I said, I met them in 2012. We really had a good time, and they are honoring us tonight by bringing in their new album, which is entitled Can of Gas and a Match. And it's a great collection of 10 songs. And this is called Devil Crying in the Churchyard.
Devil church, y'all. Oh, you should have heard the way he cried. I seen the devil in the church, y'all. Oh, you should have heard the way he cried. Why you feel so low? He said, I'm tired of the preacher line. Devil said I was the one who told that priest, thought the boy looked better without his clothes. I'm the one that had a preacher with two different wives in two different states and two different homes. So when you say that I ain't up in church, somebody's telling you a some pack of lies. Give the people what they want. An extra man and woman on the side of all the money in your pocket that you can't flaunt. So when you say that I ain't up in church, well, now you just got me crying. I'd be sitting up in that vestibule like all the angels be flying. Oh, see the devil in the church, y'all.
With us, we've got Royce and Debbie and Shane and Mr. John all on the phone with us. Evening, gang. How are you?
Hey.
Thank you so much for bringing us the new music this evening. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Hey.
Now it drops late.
That's why you got it.
Hey, now it drops later this week.
Now. Yeah, people are downloading it on
iTunes
right now. So, and it's on Amazon.com.
Cool. When's the big release party, and where is it going to be?
The 22nd.
We got one next week
in Kenya's hometown, Lynchburg.
Okay.
And that's we love playing there, man. There's a spot there called the Stony Badger, and it they like us.
We like them.
We like them.
That'll
be the first debut.
That's the first, okay. Now, there's a few songs on this album that appeared on the live album. I think it's very cool that you put them into the studio setting. What was the thought process behind that?
That was all the songs we had.
Pretty much. So we knew how to play.
Now. Come on now. You all know that that's not true.
Some days it is.
Oh, goodness gracious. Talk about the writing process that went into the new songs on the album.
The writing process?
Yeah.
Speak on it, Jay. The new songs on the album or just in general, Vic?
Well, I guess just in general overall, but anything different with the new songs? I mean, Miss Debbie's, you know, this is her first time recording with you guys, right?
Yeah.
Debbie, you're still there. I can't believe it.
I'm
talking about with these knuckleheads. I would have thought by now you would have run away screaming.
I love my brothers very much. I would not run away screaming unless they make me eat pork rinds. Just kidding, guys.
Okay, songwriting.
Sorry, songwriting. Actually, it's a really interesting process. Let me talk. Can I talk about it, guys? Because I really was new to the game with you guys, and pretty much we just jam, and then Jay, he's just amazing. He just comes up with these lyrics that are just so incredibly powerful, and I'm like, where are these coming from? I mean, the guy's a poet, and then, you know, we got Royce, you know, playing those lines with me that's just like driving and powerful, and then Shane just screams, and it's like, wow, and that's how it is, and it's like that every time. Would you agree? Shane just sitting here staring.
That's about right.
So Jay, where did these words come from?
My soul, man. My soul. Debbie actually hit the nail on the head, man. I mean, that's how we create songs. We go into our practice spot and we just start playing and we see what happens. And I think we're blessed in the fact that, you know, we're able to creatively connect really quick. And I'm a writer just in general. So I've always got some sort of story going on in my head or a lie. As you know, Stephen King said that, you know, the best storytellers ain't nothing but good liars. So, you know, but in any case, the fact of the matter is, I mean, I could come up with a theme and what Royce, Shane, and Debbie do, they're able to paint a whole picture. So I think it's special in that vein of the creative process, because we know a lot of musicians and we see a lot of bands that are talking about, you know, we're gonna get together and have a writing session or something like that. The song might not even be written. Even after we play it out in public, the song ain't even written. A matter of fact, the one you just played,
yeah.
Devil Cried in the Churchyard?
Yeah.
We just learned how to play that last month.
It was yesterday, I thought. Sorry.
we played that song many different ways.
And tomorrow it'll be a totally different song? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, no.
No, it won't be totally different. I just got to listen to my own song and write the lyrics. Vinny, that song still isn't written down.
Oh, my goodness. So you could sing different lyrics every night.
That has happened with a lot of our songs, but we're a little more professional, a little more polished now, a little more polished. We cubic zirconium right now, so
okay.
9 times out of 10, you'll get the same verse now when you come to a show. We like that all the time.
We can't guarantee that the 10
times out of 10.
Let's listen to another one. This is one that came off of the that was on the live album, 59 Chevy. Tell us the tale behind the song.
Let me start here. Hang on a second, Will. That song was a riff that I wrote like 10 years ago at a church. And just that intro riff, it stuck with me. Go ahead, Royce.
Well, I was going to say that Jeremy Powell is featured on this one on keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first song that we actually played with him last year at the IBC. We went down and played with him on Bill Street at the Tap Room. And with Vince Johnson and the PlayStation All-Stars, they had an open mic thing going on.
That was Memphis Blues Society. That was our Memphis Blues Society jam, which we'll be having again this year, 4 nights at the Tap Room. Sorry, self-serving plug.
No problem.
Self-serving plug.
But, yeah, we walked in the door. They asked us if we could play something. We were like, yeah, and that's the first song that we played. It's on YouTube, too. You can find it there. But Jeremy and the horns, and we had, like, another slide player, a bunch of trombones, and it was phenomenal. So when we decided to record, we had to have a little bit of that back with us. So we had to get Jeremy on there with us for it, and kind of like how it came out.
Bush League 59 Chevy, and this is from the new album, Can of Gasoline and Can of Gas and a Match.
Plans for 2013?
promote the album.
Strong arming people into buying this album.
And playing a lot, hopefully.
Yeah, now you all have, I mean, you all have day gigs. How hard is it to get out, I mean, to get away from home for extended periods of time?
It can be a challenge scheduling for four or five people to get out on the road.
Absolutely.
And how do you battle that? Or do you just decide, okay, here we are at this point, we'll just stay within what we can do for weekends and continue to grow via the social media, and hopefully that at some point the day jobs can go away?
No.
Yeah.
That never works.
No.
That never works, Vinny. I mean, it's a challenge, and you know, it takes a lot of discussion, and by discussion, I mean argumentation about the logistics behind this whole endeavor. But the last thing we are going to do is try to sit back and become some sort of internet sensation. It'll happen once they see Royce's pretty face on the video, then, you know, everybody come flocking. But until such time, no, we got to get out on the road. We got to do that. And I think one of the biggest problems with music today is that too many people, the Chitlin circuit needs to be revived, Vinny. The Chitlin circuit needs to be revived.
Yeah.
And I think that really, I would deign to say that blues artists are pretty much the only thing keeping the Chitlin circuit going.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, pretty much. And unfortunately, a lot of those clubs are closing because of economics are difficult right now. It's hard to survive. It's hard to pay bands. We have that argument here in Memphis all the time. And you know, there's not a lot of people coming out to the clubs, so the club owners have a hard time paying the bands what they want. So most of our musicians end up on the road. As we were talking to Terry Evans earlier in the evening and so many other guests, you know, it always seems like you're more popular in the next town over.
That's a good slogan. Internationally known, locally accepted. I think that's what every artist works for.
Yeah. Loving the direction the band is going. You know, I've been a fan since I first met you guys. Really enjoy you when you're on stage. Y'all have a great time on stage, and wish so much luck with the album. And again, I'm honored that you allowed us to play some of it here tonight. Hope you get back toward Memphis real soon.
Thanks a lot for having us, Vinny.
Yeah, thanks, Vinny.
Thanks, Vinny. Thank you, Vinny.
We're going to do one more from the album, Prodigal Son.
Really? All right.
Really, why?
No, just that. Awesome.
Oh, that I'm giving that. That's the third song? Okay, or Prodigal Son. Did I do good cooking?
Vinny, it's your show. You play whatever you want.
Hey, no, you know, I won't make you happy too, bro. I just want to, you know, tell me about the song.
Hey, Shane, explain.
Prodigal Son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an old blues song that I learned from Keith Richards from one of the Stones albums that they did that on.
Okay.
And it just always struck a chord in me. And when I figured out that it was played in open E, it was like a revelation. So I started doing more exploring, and you know, the rest is kind of history, and here we are. So Prodigal Son.
You know, gang, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We'll hope to see y'all soon, and you know, much luck with the album. Get out there and make them love you, you know.
Thank you, Vinny.
The Bush League, a can of gas and a match. This is Prodigal Son. Thank you.
took all he had, started down the road. Man, that'll be the way to get along. Well, the man said, I'll give you a job for to feed my swine, for to feed my swine. I'll give you a job for to feed my swine. The poor boy, he just hung his head and cried. I believe I'm right, believe I'll go back home, believe I'll go back home, believe I'll ride, believe I'll go back home, more down the road as far as I can go, that'll be the way to get along. Well, Father says, see my son, hung his head and cried. Poor boy, he just hung his head and cried. Said, Father, would you look on me as a child?
And you can find out more about the Bush League at www.thebushleague.com. They're also on Facebook and on Twitter. They are at the_Bush_League. So check them out. You'll be glad you did. And now I'm pleased to welcome in Ms. Deborah. I'm sorry, I'm looking at my switchboard and trying to do three things at once. Miss Deborah Devy. Deborah is the leader of the band Devy. She's a Thunder Girl Rock Nation artist and the first female guitarist invited to record for Guitar World's Lick of the Day iPhone app. But on top of all that, she's written a book entitled The Language of the Blues from Alka Rub to Zuzu, which has already won the ASCAP Deems Taylor Award for Outstanding Book on Music. Evening, Deborah, and thanks for taking a seat on the couch.
Hey, Fanny, I'm happy to be here on the couch, metaphorically.
Yeah. So why the book?
Well, you know, I worked for a while as the associate editor of Blues Review magazine, and while I was there, I really started to question whether I knew what words like mojo and hoodoo really meant. I mean, I had always tossed them around, but I started to get curious, and I wanted to really dig in and find out where these words are from and what they meant. And I started to keep a list, and when I got to 100 words, I thought, well, maybe this might be a book.
Yeah, and so, okay, so by your job at Blues Review gave you the opportunity to talk to some of the people who you talked to, Bonnie Raitt, Dr. John, Hubert Sumlin, and so many more. You had a connection to them to be able to talk to them about all these words, correct?
Yeah, so I mean, so that was where I got the initial connection. I interviewed Dr. John for Blues Review. I interviewed Bonnie for Blues Review. But I wrote this book, you know, long after I had moved on from working for Blues Review. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was kind of tough initially backtrack for a minute. When I started working on the book, I was trying to think of a contribution I could make that might be a little bit different than what other people have done. And since I'm not a scholar, I'm a rock musician and a writer, I thought, you know, maybe I could talk directly to the artists and ask them, you know, what do these words mean to you? So I started to reach out to different blues artists, and it was kind of tough to get interviews because their managers and publicists, you know, didn't really see the value in an interview for, you know, some obscure book. Mm-hmm. You know, as one of the publicists said to me, this isn't going to sell his album this year, you know.
Right, yeah.
Who knows when the book's going to come out and whatever. So I actually kind of got lucky because New York City did this blues, sort of gave the city the keys to the blues and had a big concert at Lincoln Center. And someone tipped me off that there's going to be a press event at the Lincoln Center at Barnes & Noble. And I went that afternoon, and sitting along one wall was everyone I could ever dream of interviewing. It's like Hubert Sumlin, Milton Campbell, Robert Jr. Lockwood, Eddie Shaw, at least a dozen of our great elder blues artists.
Sure.
And between me and them was sort of a phalanx of managers and publicists. But they were sitting there, and they were doing an autograph line for fans. So people were bringing their guitars and their CDs to be signed. So I got in the autograph line, and I just talked to each man as I went down the line, and I explained the mission of the book. And I walked away with 11 home phone numbers. Each person said, this sounds great. This sounds important. Give me a call.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah, you have to go right to the artist, because the people that, you know, think that they're helping them.
Sure.
Screening,
and
I
did. You know, I totally understood. I mean, especially, you know, the managers are doing their jobs when they're trying
sure.
to prevent the artist from getting tired out doing a lot of, you know, interviews that might not be beneficial. But when I talked to each artist, I mean, they instantly got that this could be, you know, a valuable contribution to the history of the blues, and that it would be an opportunity for them to share some of their history, which they certainly did, and I think is what made the book come alive.
Yeah, absolutely. How long did it take to write the book?
About a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, about 16-hour days.
Do you know offhand what the longest entry in the book is?
Certainly it would be for the word blues.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure. There are a lot of entries. I mean, there's just so much to read. I'm still going through it. It's, you know, I keep going back to it and just kind of jumping around from letter to letter and just, you know, looking things up. And if something comes to mind, I say, let me go see if Deborah's got that in the book. And
great.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, it's amazing how many terms are metaphors for sex. And, you know, coffee grinding and cabbage and grind and honey dripper. And it's such an important part of the blues, but it's all done in these metaphors.
You know, I actually, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. No, please go.
Well, okay. I was going to say that, you know, I actually make the point in the book that, and some other, you know, I didn't just come up with this, some other scholars have said this, that yes, it's true that a lot of blues songs seem to be about a lover, but many of them are about, you know, killing a cheating lover or being kept in chains by love. And some people have made the point, and I think it's very plausible, that some of these songs may have been metaphors for slavery. And, you know, recently freed slaves couldn't necessarily talk about being kept in chains and wanting to kill the master, but certainly you could write an angry song about you know, hating someone and wanting to see them dead and stuff like that, and couch it in romantic terms. So I think there's a fair amount of signifying that goes on in the blues as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Was there a phrase or a word that surprised you most when you learned of its origins?
You know, I have to credit Hubert Sumlin for surprising me the most, and that was with the phrase Killing Floor. And in fact, he was the first artist I interviewed directly for the book. And I, you know, when I sat down with him, I opened the conversation by talking about Killing Floor, and I had read all the various accounts in books and internet research and everything saying that that song, Howlin' Wolf was singing about the Chicago slaughterhouses, you know, the Killing Floor, where many Delta bluesmen got jobs when they came up to Chicago because it was really, you know, hideous work. So I was expecting Hubert to just confirm that. Instead, he was like, no, it's not all of that. And he just went on this whole other incredible story about what inspired that song. And I thought, wow, we really need to talk to the artists.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. I was just flipping through to find the Killing Floor.
Well,
down on the Killing Floor is to have hit rock bottom, according to Hubert Sumlin, whose licks on Howling Wolf's Killing Floor are the building blocks of the electric blues guitar. Sumlin,
he said basically that, you know, Wolf was using it as a metaphor for depression, and that he was, you know, he would tell his stories to Chester Burnett, and they would, you know, come up with lyrics. And he told Wolf told the story about one time he was coming home from tour, and his girlfriend at the time, he sent him down to the corner store to get some groceries, like, oh, I'll make you a wonderful welcome home dinner, go get some groceries. And while that was really just her pretense to get him out of sight so that she could ransack the bus for evidence that he had been unfaithful, and she found a pair of ladies' panties, which she insists belonged to some other band member. But by the time Howlin' Wolf was walking back up the street, she was leaning out the second floor window of their home with a shotgun and started shooting at him. And as Hubert said, we picked Buckshot out of his behind for a week, and he was really depressed and down about it, and he wrote that song about her.
Obviously going through, you know, a lot of terms I had heard, and, you know, reading the descriptions, you know, I was pretty close, but there, you know, one that jumped out at me was Sweetback Papa.
Mm.
You know, it was just a term I had never really heard before. I just, you know, I was like, okay. So, you know, there are things, if you think you know about the blues, I guess the point I'm trying to make, you know, even someone who, you know, spends a lot of time dealing with the blues, you're going to find stuff in here that's going to surprise you. And I'm, again, flipping through my notes, and I probably should have had just the pages marked, but that would have been too darn easy.
well, that's okay. I don't remember half the stuff in the book myself. So
yeah.
Take your time.
Sweetback Papa, here it is. According to Big Bill Bronzy, a Sweetback Papa was a man who avoided manual labor by playing the blues and sponging off of the women.
Yeah, today we call these people drummers.
Zing. That was Deborah. That wasn't me.
I'm kidding. My drummer's wonderful and works hard. But
yeah. Now, you know, you wrote, you know, you wrote about blues for a time, but you even said it earlier. I mean, you're a rocker.
Yeah, so I'm a rock musician.
Yeah, you're a rock musician. You're not a blues musician, but though blues, a lot of rock comes out of the blues. Talk about your band.
My band's called Devi, and that's a Sanskrit word for the feminine. In Hindu mythology, they divide the universe into the male and the female, Devi and Deva. And everything that actually takes form, including music, is under the heading of Devi, the feminine, but it needs the male energy to animate it and bring it to life. So I thought that I practice a lot of yoga, too, so that's why we named the band that. But I actually, you know, I grew up in Milwaukee, and the first live shows I saw were blues shows at a little place called the Metropole Theater. And the live show that probably affected me the most was when I saw Sun Seals and Coco Taylor when I was 16. And I just remember flying out of my chair onto the dance floor like I was possessed, and just, I never danced before. I'd never heard the blues before. I had no reason to be so grabbed, but I just was transported. And I met my first boyfriend that night. He was like this little blues nerd, and we just went to every show we could go to, including these amazing shows that were held in the cornfield halfway between Milwaukee and Chicago, and saw John Lee Hooker and B.B. King there. And so anyway, when I moved to New York and started playing music, I got into punk bands initially, but I always wanted to do this bluesy jamming thing. And so finally I had to kind of start my own band, and, you know, we sound more like classic rock, but, you know, we take off and we jam and we try to reach the same places that, you know, blues artists are trying to reach when they do that.
Yeah, when you saw John Lee, was Junior with him? I just had a great conversation with Junior.
I heard that. It was wonderful. No, he was solo. And like I said, the show was out in the middle of a cornfield. So it was just a scaffolding stage and generators, and very special.
That's incredible. I just want to mention at this point, for our last show, 2012, next week, I'm going to welcome in Eddie Martin and music from his latest album, Looking Forward, Looking Back. And also Corey Luke joins me to talk about his career and his new album, It Ain't Easy. We also have two past Couch Kids bringing us some more new music to listen to. Pierre Lacahette from Mississippi Heat will discuss the success of their latest release, Delta Bound. And Dusty from Robodrum comes by with their latest album, Big Bad Wolf. It's been out on limited release, but it's about to drop big time. Dusty is an old friend of the show, and he spends a lot of time in the chat room when he's not out traveling and doing shows. Last show, 2012. Holy crap. How did that happen? And again, I apologize, but the New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, when I was going to do review shows, just not going to get them done the way I want them to be done. So I'm not going to do them this year, but we will make sure that we get them together for next year. You can check out all the archives at musiconthecouch.com. I also want to give a special shout out to those who have already signed up as sponsors for the International Blues Challenge Live webcasts. Once again, Blackfoot Custom Amps has taken on a major sponsor role. Also joining as sponsors this year, Rum Boogie Cafe, Blues411.com, the Austin Blues Society, the No Refund Band, the Topeka Blues Society, Frank Rozak Promotions, and Irene Torres and the Sugar Devils. And you can help support these live webcasts. Send an email to 2013IBC@musiconthecouch.com, 2013IBC@musiconthecouch.com for more details, and you can get your message to thousands of dedicated blues fans worldwide. The book was out electronically, and now I see that you've got it coming out as a paperback, correct?
Yep. Just came out in print last month.
So how's it doing? Well, people reacting well to it?
Yeah, it's been great. It's got a lot of color pictures. It's got about 40 photos, including 17 in color of all the different artists that I interviewed, as well as some archival pictures that I got from Steve Lever and Delta Hayes. I was invited in early September. I was invited to Montana to the Crown of the Continent Guitar Festival, where I sold and signed books every night at their concerts. Which was just amazing, and I sold a whole bunch of books. And then, I've been writing for American Blues Scene, and they've been excerpting a definition from the book roughly once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So they were kind enough to set up a little book tour for me down in the Delta. So I was down there for a week, and I was at Delta Blues Museum and Turnbull Books and Cathead Gallery in Clarksdale, and just had an incredible, at the Highway 61 Blues Festival in Leland, and just, I had the most incredible time.
Was that your first time ever down there?
It was, and it was just so great, because, you know, having written about this for so long and having such a passion for the blues, to finally get to go to the Delta was just, you know, really a dream come true. Great experience. And I think, you know, every American should go down there and take the Mississippi Blues Trail.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we were just unfortunately had a funeral today for an extended family member, and as we were going from this service at the funeral home to lunch at the family center for the church family center, we were driving down, and all of a sudden I looked at my wife and said, "That was a Blues Trail marker." And
oh,
I
really?
Back, I had to pull over and stop and check it out. Yeah, down in the new Albany Pontotoc area. It was
cool.
Yeah, so you know, it's so cool to have them all around and to try to see, you know, try to stop and check them out, and it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the efforts that are being made to encourage blues tourism and you know, help to revitalize the economy, because I mean, it's just, you know, it's really still pretty rough down there in terms you know, unemployment. And what amazed me was how many Europeans I saw and I met who were wandering around checking out the Delta and were completely fascinated. And I came back thinking, you know, why don't more Americans go down there? I mean, it's right in our backyard and it's an incredible resource.
Yeah. And it is true. You know, blues is so strong over in Europe. Having that conversation earlier with Terry Evans and why, you know, he's much more popular over in Europe than he is here in the United States. And, you know, he just couldn't answer the question. But it's, you know, during the Blues Music Awards, there's so many people coming over from Europe. And now in, you know, a couple, 6 weeks, the IBC is here in Memphis. You know, so many European representatives coming over, people, you know, finding a way to come up with the cash to get here once they win their local challenges all over the world.
Yeah,
so.
And we could just drive down, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I don't know, for me, you know, like I said, I had these early experiences as a teenager falling in love with the blues and having, you know, incredible exposure to Chicago blues artists. And then I moved to New York City, which has an incredible music scene and some great blues artists, but I always felt sort of homesick for, you know, for the blues from Chicago. And then when I was down in the Delta, I felt reconnected again with that part of my heart, you know. It was beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. I was, I jumped at the chance to move here when I did 6 years ago. So,
preaching to the converted here.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, absolutely. Deborah, so much luck with the book.
Thank you.
And the band. You can find the book on Amazon and Deborah's site, which is www.devi-rock.com. She's also on Facebook and on Twitter. She is Deborah Devi. I keep saying your last name wrong. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Davey.
Davey. Deborah Davey, at Deborah Davey, Debradevi. We're going to play a song from your album. Tell us about All That I Need.
All That I Need is the simplest song on my album, because I have a friend who said to me, "Why don't you write a simple song like the Rolling Stones, just like three chords?" So it's three chords all the way through. And people tell me it's a really catchy song. In fact, it looks like it's just been picked up for a radio promotion campaign by a company called Road King Entertainment, and we're really excited about that. Another thing I can tell you about the song is we have a very special guest playing piano on it, Rob Flores, who played with Blues Traveler and the Black Crowes.
Oh, there we go, yes. I really just, you know, got to download the album and was listening through, and I said, I'm going to play that one. I like that song.
Cool.
Deborah, have a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year you and yours, and thanks for checking us out and coming on, and we'll see you all next week for our, last show of 2012. How does that happen? From Deborah Devi, All That I Need. And why...